Hello and welcome to Plugged In. I'm Greta Van Susteren, and this week, all eyes on the simmering standoff between the United States and Iran. The U.S. has pulled out of the JCPOA. That's the nuclear weapons agreement. So what's going to happen now? We're going to hear from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and the man who advises him, Brian Hook. And we are live on Facebook at Voice of America, and we want your comments and questions. And now it's been about 3 weeks since President Donald Trump announced to the world that the U.S. is withdrawing from the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. At the time, critics of the move asked, what's Plan B? Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has now answered those critics, laying out U.S. demands in a 12-point framework for security with Iran.
First, Iran must declare to the IAEA full account of the prior military dimensions of its nuclear program and permanently and verifiably abandon such work in perpetuity. Second, Iran must stop enrichment and never pursue plutonium reprocessing. This includes closing its heavy water reactor. Third, Iran must also provide the IAEA with unqualified access to all sites throughout the entire country. Iran must end its proliferation of ballistic missiles and halt further launching or development of nuclear-capable missile systems. Iran must release all U.S. citizens, as well as citizens of our partners and allies, each of them detained on spurious charges. Iran must end support to Middle East terrorist groups, including Lebanese Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Iran must respect the sovereignty of the Iraqi government and permit the disarming, demobilization, and reintegration of Shia militias. Iran must also end its military support for the Houthi militia and work towards a peaceful political settlement in Yemen. Iran must withdraw all forces under Iranian command throughout the entirety of Syria. Iran, too, must end support for the Taliban and other terrorists in Afghanistan and the region and cease harboring senior al-Qaeda leaders. Iran, too, must end the IRG Quds Force's support for terrorists and militant partners around the world. And two, Iran must end its threatening behavior against its neighbors, many of whom are U.S. allies. This certainly includes its threats to destroy Israel and its firing of missiles into Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. It also includes threats to international shipping and destructive cyber attacks.
In an interview with VOA's Persian service, Secretary Pompeo called the objectives of the Iran nuclear deal a noble objective, a good goal. But he said the deal does not address all of Iran's other behavior that presents a much larger threat.
They're taking the human rights away from their people. All of these things are things President Trump cares deeply about. And so his vision is that if we begin again to set out what we think are pretty basic ideas, right? So these 12 things that I listed are all pretty straightforward. We're not asking a lot from the Iranian leadership. Just behave like normal leaders. Don't loot your people. Don't waste your people's money on these adventures in Syria and in Yemen and in Lebanon and in Iraq. The list goes on. Lead your people. Build a great nation. Use the resources you have for that. That's all we're simply looking for.
Iran's behavior is not as simple as it may sound. The U.S. is reimposing economic sanctions on Iran. And I talked to Brian Hook, the State Department's Director of Policy Planning and the Senior Policy Advisor to Secretary of State Pompeo. I asked him, what are the next steps for the United States now that it has withdrawn from the Iran nuclear deal?
Iran has been a priority for this president and for the Secretary of State. We inherited the Iran nuclear deal, and we also inherited an Iran that was expanding a lot of its malign presence and malign activities across the Middle East. The president decided to see if he could fix the Iran nuclear deal. We made our best effort with our European allies to try to address some of the deficiencies. We came up short on that, and the president has left the deal. And now we have a new strategy that Secretary Pompeo launched last week.
Before we get to the new strategy, how do you explain to the people of Iran, for instance, or even the Iran government, is how we can have a deal? President Obama had a deal in 2015 with Iran and with a lot of other nations, and suddenly the United States decides, well, we don't like that deal and walks away from that deal. How do you explain that that's okay?
This is the third Iran nuclear deal that has failed. And the problem with all three of the deals is that the deals not only did not they failed to benefit the Iranian people, it actually, we think, in many ways made it worse for the Iranian people. The Iran nuclear deal gave enormous sanctions relief to the Iranian regime. They then spent that money on foreign wars and terrorism and a range of activities which destabilized the Middle East. The protests that we saw in December and January in Iran conveyed a lot of the same frustrations that we have with the regime. And we think that the IRGC, the Quds Force, spends a great deal of its money on foreign wars, and that's money that should be going into the Iranian economy and supporting the Iranian people.
But my point is this, is that we walked away from a deal we already made. This could have been a treaty, except for the fact I don't think President Obama could have gotten the signatures for a treaty, but that would have made it permanent. Back in 2015, did the Iranian government, do you think that they thought that it was possible that the United States would walk away from its word on an agreement?
If the Obama administration had negotiated a deal that actually achieved our national security goals and achieved the goals that they themselves set for themselves, there may have been a chance to submit it to the Senate as a treaty. They did not have the votes. It did not have the Iran deal, did not have the support of the Congress. And so President Obama went to the UN Security Council, where he had votes in New York, but he did not have them in Washington. And what President Trump has proposed is to have a treaty relationship with the Iranian people, with Iran, if they're willing to stop their nuclear program, stop their missile program, stop the range of activities which are fueling violence and terrorism in the Middle East. And if they're willing to do that, we have a very bright future between our two countries.
Do you see, just going down the road a bit, do you see any deal between President Trump and the United States that would not be a treaty with Iran at this point? Would the president, for instance, be willing to just make a deal with Iran, maybe under different terms, but make a deal short of being an official treaty?
Well, our goal is to have a treaty. And there's many different ways that you can capture a change in a bilateral relationship. We inherited a Iran nuclear deal that isn't even called an agreement. It's called a plan of action. It didn't even have signatures. I don't know if people know that. The Iran nuclear deal doesn't even have signatures. It has no legal status. It is a plan that was agreed to by an administration no longer in office. And President Trump decided that if we were going to stay in that, we needed to address a lot of the key deficiencies around sunset clauses, around a weak inspections regime, the absence of ICBMs. And if we can address those, then there's a way forward. But we weren't able to do that. And so now we're looking at an entirely new approach.
Why do you think that other nations like the UK or France, for instance, they're willing to stay in the agreement in spite of that?
It's hard to know exactly why. The United States has decided for itself that we are leaving. The president has decided he's left the Iran nuclear deal. Other countries have to make their own decisions.
Is it an economic one with them? I mean, now France has a lot of contracts, for instance. You've got, you know, aviation, for instance, is a big deal to France. Is it the trade or the finances, you think, that keeps those countries in and not national security?
We've heard from the Europeans that they are concerned about continuing commercial relations with Iran. We have announced a campaign of intense financial pressure on the Iranian regime to change its policies. And Secretary Pompeo, in his speech, laid out the 12 areas where we need to see a change in Iranian behavior and a change in Iranian policy. In return, the United States is willing to put on the table an entirely different relationship with Iran and with the Iranian people. So our focus is on, right now, we're in the early stages of what's going to be the most intense sanctions sort of regime that Iran has had on it. And our goal is to try to get to a better place with the regime and so that they change a lot of their policies, which have been so bad, not only for the United States, but also for the people.
Are we merely reimposing sanctions, or will we be reimposing the sanctions that have been lifted and we're adding more sanctions? Will there be even tougher pressure on the Iranian government and the Iranian people?
As a condition for the United States to participate in the Iran deal, we were waiving sanctions quarterly. That's now ended. All of the sanctions that were lifted under the JCPOA as a condition for our staying in are now being lifted. we are going to put those in place, and we're going to add additional sanctions across as many sectors of the Iranian economy as we can, so that we can signal to the regime our seriousness of purpose.
Does the U.S. have enough economic muscle with the sanctions so the United States can do it unilaterally and create an impact on Iran, or do we have to worry about being undercut by other nations who are unwilling to join us?
Now, the good news here is that you already have European countries who've decided to end business with Iran. You've had Total, Maersk, Siemens. Other companies have decided that they're not going to do business with Iran anymore. This continues a trend that even predates the president leaving the Iran nuclear deal. You've seen a decline in foreign direct investment in the Iranian economy. And that's for one, I think, important reason. It is hard for foreign investors to know when they invest in Iran, whether they're facilitating commerce or facilitating terrorism. And we are trying to expose the corruption of the Iranian regime, expose how opaque the regime is, and to warn foreign investors about the dangers of investing in Iran.
So how does the United States ever have comfort in what Iran says? I guess one of the things that Secretary Pompeo said is that we'll have basically unfettered opportunity to inspect. Do you ever would you ever believe Iran if they, is there such a thing?
Iran, on its nuclear file, has been engaging in decades of cat-and-mouse diplomacy, not only with the Europeans, but also with the United States. And we, as I said, this is the third nuclear deal that has failed to achieve its goals. We have put forth a strategy that's different than the last administration because we're not narrowly focusing on the Iran nuclear file. That's a big part of it. But the Iran nuclear deal limited itself to just the nuclear program, and it looked the other way on all of the other activities that Iran is engaging
in. Freezing the assets to fund those things.
Yes. The Iran nuclear deal made Iran more aggressive because it gave Iran more money. I mean, why would Iran fund less terrorism when they're given more money to fund terrorism? And that's exactly what they did. And by it also, the Iran nuclear deal also limited our diplomatic options. Being out of the deal now, it allows us to not only launch a sanctions campaign of financial pressure, it also really expands, I think, our ability to show the full range of Iran's nuclear threats. I think that the Obama administration tolerated a lot of Iranian bad behavior to get the deal, and they tolerated much worse bad behavior to keep the deal going. And we've decided that those days are over and that we need to address the entire range of Iran's threats to peace and security.
What's your thought about the fact that there have been protests, in December and January by the people, and even going back, I think it was June, right after President Obama came into office, is that there were protests as well. Is that the Iranian people seem to protest periodically, but then it stops?
Well, one of the things that that we're very proud of is we stood strongly at all levels of the executive branch with the Iranian people during their protests. What they were expressing, the right things to express, and as I said earlier, so many of their hopes are the same hopes that we have, that Iran will start behaving like a normal country and not fund foreign wars, not pour gasoline on civil wars, not engage in terrorism and terrorize people throughout the region. I really think this has been going on for so long we've become desensitized to it. And it's really important, and we're going to be spending a lot more time at the State Department exposing the full range of Iran's threatening activities.
But it's sort of interesting. I mean, they're sort of caught between a rock and a hard place because the Iranian people, if they object to, if they don't like their regime, at the same time they know that the sanctions from the United States are making their economy, it's pinching their economy. So why would the fact we say we stand with you as we're pinching their economy, how can that possibly bring comfort to them?
Two thoughts there. The longest suffering people of the Iranian regime are the Iranian people. And the Iranian government is the one that's been pinching the economy. What we are trying to do.
You think they believe that? They don't think it's U.S. sanctions are doing it, that instead it's their leaders that are doing it?
Well, the Iran regime spends so much time spreading lies and falsehoods and disinformation to its own people. It's very hard to know how much people in Iran understand the truth. But the Iranian regime has been draining the Iranian economy of money so that it can fight foreign wars and fund terrorism. And they use that money. That money over the years has been used to kill and maim thousands of Americans in Iraq and Afghanistan. So we are trying to educate the Iranian people on the corruption of the Iranian economy and all of the malign behavior that they're doing that really isolates Iran.
Are there currently discussions going on with Iran about the possibility of another deal with them, or are we now sort of a standoff where they're over in their part of the world and we're over here on our part of the world, or are there ongoing discussions?
We have not had any discussions with the Iranians since Secretary Pompeo gave his speech. If you look at his speech, Secretary Pompeo's speech was very much addressed to the Iranian people. Many sections of the speech were addressed to the Iranian people. President Trump has spoken a number of times at the UN General Assembly, also at the Riyadh summit. He spoke directly to the Iranian people. He spoke to them in October, in January. We are very focused on supporting the legitimate aspirations of the Iranian people, and we will continue to do that.
Can you foresee any agreement with the United States and Iran, United States and North Korea, that these two agreements would in any way differ from each other? I recognize the fact that North Korea actually has a nuclear weapon and Iran doesn't, but would you expect both of these agreements to be the same?
Well, the president has called for a new treaty relationship with North Korea. He's also called for a new treaty relationship with the Iranian people. We are prepared to do something big and historic, but it's premised upon a couple of very important conditions. In the case of North Korea, they need to denuclearize. We need to have the complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of North Korea. On the Iranian side, they don't have a nuclear weapon, but they have the intent and they've shown repeatedly that they have the ambition to do that. They're also the largest sponsor of terrorism in the world. So North Korea and Iran are very different. We are very focused on achieving our national security objectives. One of the ways to do that is through a deal. There's a number of ways to do it. We have expressed a preference to have a treaty that we could take to the United States Congress that would have such universal support that we wouldn't need to then do an end run around Congress or have to go to the UN Security Council to go around Congress, because we would have enough confidence in the deal that we've negotiated that we'd be very happy to take it to Congress.
A new U.S. strategy appealing to the Iranian people to change the behavior of Iran's leaders. Can it work? Join me to analyze the next steps in the U.S.-Iran relationship, Arian Tabatabai, Director of Curriculum and a professor at Georgetown University. She's a senior associate for the Proliferation Prevention Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies and a fellow at Harvard University's Belfer Center. Arian has supported the Iran nuclear deal. Also joining us is Benham Ben Talibu. He is for the Foundation for Defensive Strategies. He has been against the Iran nuclear deal, and both of you join you. Thank you very much. First, let me ask you, Arian, sanctions is the weapon that the United States is using to change the behavior in Iran. Historically, have the sanctions, have they had a strong economic impact on Iran?
Yeah, absolutely. Sanctions can work. We have seen them work. They worked in 2005 to 2012, which is when the Obama administration decided to impose multi-layered, multilateral sanctions on Iran, many backed by the UN Security Council and the U.S.'s main partners and allies. And they worked. They helped bring Iran back to the negotiating table and ultimately led to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the nuclear deal you were mentioning earlier on. That said, when you want sanctions to work, you have to make sure that you're also giving some sort of hope for relief. You have to combine sticks and carrots. You have to be able to put pressure, but also allow the opponent, the adversary, to know that if they do behave, if they do comply with your requests, if they do change their behavior, that they will be granted some sort of relief. And I'm not sure that the Trump administration has signaled this so far to Iran.
Madam, it seems to me that the strategy of the Trump administration is that they really want to reach out to the Iranian people and get the people. And there have been a history of protests, whether the ones last December or even the ones that I mentioned that were in June of 2012. But the people are objecting to the fact that they're having problems, they're having trouble economically. But how do we know that they're blaming, their government and not blaming the United States for spearheading the sanctions? Because, it seems to me to make a big difference.
It's an important question, but it's also important to remember that the Iranian people speak for themselves, and they are their own best advocates. So when the Iranian people go out into the street and they chide the regime for its foreign adventures, you know who they blame. When they go out into the regime and they, not in big cities, but in smaller cities like Khazaroon, and they say, stop spending money in Gaza, spend it in Khazaroon, you know who the Iranian people are blaming.
But are they having much of an impact? Because that stuff is still going on. I mean, well, they may take to the streets.
That stuff is still going on, Greta, because the Iranian government, the Islamic Republic of Iran, is a master of sponsoring terrorism. It is also a master of domestic repression. It learns from every time it successfully puts down protests. From 2009 to 2017, there was a massive learning curve. The Iranian government migrated onto social media and then used the cyber domain to successfully quell and repel protests.
Yeah, Ariane, one of the things that that the United States has talked about is the fact that in the 2015 agreement, which you support, is that it unfroze assets, which unfroze a terrific amount of money that we've just spoken about, and that's used to cause a lot of problems in Yemen, supporting the Houthi rebels or Hezbollah. What about that? The release of the money.
Well, look, I mean, the Islamic Republic of Iran, as Behnam was noting, has been sponsoring terrorism since its early days in 1979. They didn't wait for the frozen assets. They didn't wait for sanctions relief. And in fact, even during the peak of sanctions, they were supporting these groups throughout the region. The reason for it is that, yes, they have their behavior is malign and it is a problem to the United States, but they see it as a security concern. They see their activities in Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria as
So what's the solution? What would you do?
Well, I think that there needs to be several things. Number one, we need to have the support of our allies and our partners in the region and beyond, including the European Union, to be able to actually have a policy that works.
Which is a little bit difficult when you've got so much money tied up. And let's just take France and the UK. I mean, they've got so much money tied up, whether it's with the oil industry, whether it's Total or BP, a lot of money, or the aviation industry. I mean, how do you get your allies on board when there's so much money involved?
I think that's true, but I think there is another layer to it, too, and that's that the EU actually sees the nuclear deal as a baseline that allows them to engage the Iranians on a number of other concerns. They have the same concerns we have, right? They actually have a lot of problems with Iran's human rights track record. They have a lot of problems with Iran's regional behavior. And they have been negotiating with Iran on a number of these fronts for the past few years since the JCPOA was reached. The problem is that the Trump administration has decided it's going to do away with the baseline, and it's going to start from scratch, and it's going to pursue the 12-point framework that Secretary Pompeo was laying out, which is a list of, it's a wish list, which I think we can all agree on. We would all like to see those things happen. But it is incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to achieve that in a single framework. And the Europeans have it right. They know that they can't do that. They are going to keep the nuclear deal, and they build on it.
Behnam, what would you do? I know that you were opposed to the agreement at the beginning, but you don't like the way that the method which the United States has walked away from it. But it seems to me there's no doubt that the money pouring in, whether it's because we've unfrozen assets or we continue to have economic agreements, whether it's the UK and France in spending money in Iran, as long as they get money, they're going to continue to support rebels and across the whole region destabilize the Middle East. So tell me, what would you do?
So there's a lot there, and there is a lot to do, and this is where strategy and statecraft matter, because it's not just about material capability. It's about political capability and immaterial forces like resolve. The Iranians aren't very capable, but they are very resolute, and you want to change that balance of resolve. So the first thing is, in the next 90 to 180 days, the U.S. is going to be reimposing financial penalties, not just on Iran, but on key countries and companies that have transacted with Iran, do dollar transactions with entities that are sanctioned or designated. And you want to go to those countries where they're headquartered, primarily in Europe, and get them to change their calculus. Get them to look at viewing investing in America as being more important as investing in Iran. Because currently, the EU is looking America dead in the face and remains resolute and wants to, in fact, block sanctions. And we should just remind the audience what this means. This means the European Union, as is willing to politically help the world's foremost state sponsor of terrorism bypass American sanctions. The U.S. diplomatically cannot let that happen. That's the first thing we need to do.
How are you going to stop that? How are you going to look at those two countries, especially with the oil money there, but with the terrific amount of oil money? The example being Total, French, and BP. How are you going to tell them that?
Well, in fact, most of the private multinational companies, and in fact, multinational companies headquartered in Europe, seem to be already sending the right signals, which is Total said by November, which is the 180-day deadline, if they don't get a waiver, they will have to wind down their operations, specifically in Iran's largest gas field, the South Pars gas field. What you want to do is, in fact, push European politicians to go after their state-owned companies and small and medium enterprises and prevent them from creating a channel. And the way you do that, a channel that's only for non-dollar denominated transactions. And the way you do that is you send treasury teams across the country, like Stuart Levy did in 2005, 6, and 7, and you don't just arm twist. You do handholding. You listen to the concerns of your allies. You find out places where there are appropriate places to issue waivers. And more importantly, you levy the threat of sanctions against them. And hopefully, their bottom line drives them towards you.
The State Department representative, Brian Hook, who I spoke to, said that there are no conversations going on with Iran since Secretary Pompeo spoke his speech, which is about, 10 days ago. Where do you see this going in the next 20, 40, 180 days?
Well, I think there are several problems before us. The first one is precisely what Bandham is talking about, which is that we are now driving a wedge between ourselves and our closest allies over Iran, essentially saying that we are going to penalize the European Union and its companies for doing business with Iran, for continuing the implementation of a nuclear deal that was not just signed by the six countries involved, but also seven countries with Iran, but also endorsed by the UN Security Council. So we're essentially saying we're going to twist your arm, we're going to hurt you because you're doing something that we had all agreed we would
do. Well, not exactly all. I mean, the United States, I still go back to the problem that this was never a treaty. This was something
Correct.
That was done by signature, and the reason it wasn't a treaty was because they couldn't get 2/3 of the Senate to go
Absolutely.
Along with it. So this has always been a rather fragile agreement or plan, as the Trump administration calls it.
Absolutely. All of that is true, and I think that was a major shortcoming of the nuclear deal, that it wasn't a treaty, that there was no guarantee that it would stand the test of time when it came to the transitional power in the United States. However, then going to the Europeans and other countries and saying, we are going to hurt you because you have been implementing this deal that we had reached to begin with. The United States was leading the process in 2012 to 2015, I think is starting to show some cleavages, some problems between the United States and the Europeans. That's the first thing. The second thing is that I think Brian Hook was overestimating the secretary's ability to speak to the Iranian people. Nothing in the heritage
That's always bothered me, is that there have been protests in Iran, but there have been protests often and nothing has changed. There has not been a regime change, although the Trump
Absolutely.
Administration says it's not looking for a regime change, although it certainly hasn't changed. You've got 30 seconds left on this whole topic. Will there ever be a regime change in the near future?
Again, I think that remains up to the Iranian people. The U.S. should stand with the Iranian people. This is a place
what
where...
What does that mean to stand with them, though?
Well, when the Iranian people are in the street protesting in January saying death to the dictator, that's when the U.S. should have gone after the Supreme Leader's financial assets. Not now. That's when the U.S. should have gone after Iran's state broadcaster, which airs for...
But in President Obama did the same thing.
Well, that was a strategic mistake.
That was all. All right. Anyway, thank you both very much. That's all the time we have for today. Stay plugged in by liking us on Facebook at Voice America. You can also like my Facebook page at facebook.com/Greta. And follow me on Twitter @Greta. Thank you for being plugged in.